This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. It's Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon with you once again. So much to get through. We've got Champions League to look back on and a full docket of Premier League football to look forward to this weekend. Mark, I was going to say you coming at this with a peaceful mind, full of clarity, but I suspect after watching Spurs on Tuesday, the stress is still very high.
There's nothing ever seems to come easy to Tottenham, does it really? It's they got there in the end. That's the main thing. But it just, you know, that group should not have gone down to effectively the last couple of minutes, which is, you know, what happened. They're dozing off in the first half, only playing for 45 minutes. It's very stressful at the moment. We've got a World Cup around the corner. People are pulling out of the tournament left, right and centre. It's a chaotic time.
Where would you like to start with the Champions League, the games? Or the good, bad or the ugly? Where should we start?
I think we should probably start with Paris Saint-Germain, who will have thought that 2-1 victory away to Juventus would have secured them top spot. The fact that Benfica won by 5 goals in Israel against Maccabi Haifa changed that, and they're now in pot 2. And, you know, I was talking earlier about sort of Tottenham making sort of life difficult for themselves. I mean, Paris just seem to find new ways to make the Champions League difficult for themselves. You know, like they've done so many stupid things over the years, really, in the competition. This one wasn't as stupid. You know, I mean, you know, they'll feel really hard done by. I still think that, not that they could have thought that Benfica would win by 5 goals away to Maccabi Haifa. I just don't think they played very well against Juventus. You know, they just felt that they just coasted through, only did what they needed to, and would, you know, then felt it was job done. I would just like to see them on a more consistent basis just keep playing all the time. Because you saw last year, you know, they were well on top against Real Madrid. Bad 10 minutes, they were out. And they just need to show a bit more focus. And the problem they're going to find now is that they can't play one of the weakest teams in pot one because Benfica were in their group. So that leaves them, you know, Tottenham or Porto as sort of, you know, nice draws, if you like. And you look at the sort of difficult ones for them there, Manchester City, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. I mean, these are not the sort of teams that Paris Saint-Germain want to be drawing in the last 16. A lot's going to happen between Monday's draw and the round of 16 because we've got a World Cup and was there a 3-month break. But they've just left themselves in a sticky spot. And the only other team I think that won't have been laughing at Paris's demise would probably be Bayern Munich. I don't know if you've seen the quirks of the draw because so many German teams have finished second. The draw means there's only 4 teams that Bayern Munich can draw in the last 16, and 2 of those are Liverpool and Paris Saint-Germain. Wow. The other 2, Milan and also Club Bruges. So the difference between drawing Club Bruges and Paris is just enormous, isn't it, in that sort of pot one situation. So, look, UEFA draws are never the most exciting thing. They go on for each one of them for about 29 minutes too long. But I think this is Paris dropping into pot two has definitely made it more interesting. And one final point on being sort of unseeded in the last 16, it means you're away in the second leg. And I do think that I thought it was a disadvantage before. It's even more so now because the away goal rule not in operation, which means if games go to extra time, and more of them will go to extra time because we haven't got that away goal rule, you've got that extra 30 minutes at home. And Real Madrid used that to their advantage against Chelsea and against Manchester City last season. And I do think that there is something to be said for having that game at home in the second leg. So not a great night for Paris Saint-Germain.
So much to think about when it comes to the draw. Not a great night for Paris Saint-Germain. It was a good game week for the English sides. Liverpool beat Napoli 2-0. Chelsea beat Zagreb 2-1. We've obviously spoken about Spurs and Manchester City 3-1 winners against Sevilla. I guess Man City probably the most fancied out of those. But job done for the other sides as well.
Yeah, so I mean, Manchester City didn't play well in that first half against Sevilla. Then the big guns came on. Rodri, De Bruyne, We saw Bernardo Silva, Cancelo got about 4 minutes at the end when the game was already up. I'm sure Sevilla were delighted to see him come on. Chelsea, not great. I suppose they got the win, and the big plus for them, I think probably Raheem Sterling scoring. It had been a lot of criticism of his performances for most of this season. And I'm not a huge Sterling fan. I'm sort of, you know, I don't go as far as those that, you know, absolutely can't have him, but I don't think he's in that kind of elite, top, world-class sort of bracket that I think some people, because he's played for Manchester City for so long, I think there was a reason why they got rid of him in the end. Mm. And, you know, I think he's doing okay at Chelsea, but okay is not really what Chelsea expects. I think that was a good goal and an important goal for him, just for his own confidence. And talking of confidence, Liverpool, you know, any win's a good one for them at the moment. And, you know, just getting a clean sheet and reacting to that Leeds defeat can't be a bad thing. A quick word on the Scottish teams. Obviously, Rangers became the worst team in Champions League history. Yeah. So, obviously, not great for them. Celtic were smacked by Real Madrid 5-1. I mean, it sounds a little bit condescending. I quite like the way that Celtic play football. What Ange Postecoglou is trying to do is watchable. At least they just messed up, really. The games, there's so many chances in a lot of the games. But Shakhtar were there for the taking. It's a great story that Shakhtar have made it through to the Europa League. But I think Celtic should be beating them over like the two games. And that's where they've lost it. They didn't lose it in terms of extending their season into the new year, European-wise. They didn't lose it at the Bernabeu. They didn't even lose it against Leipzig. I think they just lost it against Shakhtar. You should be beating them.
Absolutely. Any last words on the Champions League, or should we move on to the Premier League, Mark?
Let's just move on to the Premier League. We've only got two matches left, haven't we, before the World Cup?
Absolutely. Let's do it. It's time for our match of the day. And we're going with Chelsea against Arsenal this week. Really looking forward to this one on Sunday, 13-8 Chelsea, 13-8 Arsenal, 12-5 the draw. Mark, Arsenal's still going along very nicely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a very comfortable victory, wasn't it, against Nottingham Forest, who were pretty poor, but Arsenal got the early goal. They've been really good at that, actually, Arsenal, for a few years now, just beating the bad teams at home. They've got a very strong record in doing that. And I think they will have this season just because of the amount of, you know, the firepower they've got in the team. Yeah, be interesting to see whether they can hold on to top spot until at least the World Cup. And then, of course, it'll be Christmas. And I think that psychologically, that will be you know, a nice position for them to be in. But if they're to do that, they might well need to win this game, because they're 2 points clear at the moment of Manchester City. You always expect City to win sort of every time they play, almost. So, you know, the goal difference, obviously, you know, in terms of it's in City's favour. So, I'm not sure that they will actually hold on to top spot. And yeah, it might just feel like a little blow if they're not. So I do think this is actually an important game for Arsenal, because there's still been question marks, haven't there? And every time it's like, well, you know, you need to beat big teams. And then when they beat Liverpool, you're like, yeah, well, Liverpool are losing to everybody away from home, you know? And then it's like, well, actually, do you need to beat the big teams? What about if you just beat everybody else convincingly? But one of the question marks I would have about Arsenal is away from home in these situations, because they have already lost to Manchester United. And even recently,
they were slightly unlucky in that game, though.
They were unlucky. You could say they were a little bit lucky, though, to beat Leeds. And, you know, they didn't beat Southampton away. So, look, they're always going to be question marks about Arsenal, because it's been kicking around for a while now. They're sort of their mental toughness, I suppose. And last season, missing out on the top four late on just adds to that. I think this is a different Arsenal team. I think they look like they've come on a lot since last season. But this is the kind of game that would just prove it, maybe, to any doubters still remaining. If you go to Chelsea and win, then, you know, all of a sudden, those are the people that say they're not in the title race probably have to change their opinion, don't they?
I think what feels pleasing with Arsenal at the moment, Mark, is there's goals from a lot of different players. You've got Martinelli in good form. We all know about Jesus. Odegaard's popping in. Thomas Partey, like, all across the pitch, they're not short of players who can contribute. And that's going to be really powerful, particularly, you know, the longer the season goes on, there's going to be injuries to certain players. It feels like there's a depth to Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, I think the drop-off, though, still between the best players and those coming in is vast. And Reece Nelson got a couple of goals against Nottingham Forest, but, you know, the game already fell up and, you know, it was Nottingham Forest.
Forest had just come off the back of beating Liverpool.
Yeah, but they're not a good side. And if you look at, like, the difference between Jesus and Nketiah, is massive, and that will be a problem. And Jesus hasn't scored that many goals, has he? It's not really been. It's been much more to his play. Saka and Martinelli, very direct wingers. They dribble. Odegaard has played better this season. I think more consistent, maybe probably a fairer way to say it. The one player you haven't mentioned, you went through loads of them, but you sort of Mr. Arsenal, Granit Xhaka. What a roller coaster he's been on at the Emirates, but he's definitely in a fun bit at the moment, contributing goals, assists, good all-round play. Yeah, I mean, they're looking very strong. And with a young team, you can only get better. The problem is, they're up against Manchester. I've said this before, but they're up against Manchester City, who, judging on sort of recent history, are going to get a points tally in the 90s. Or, you know, the Arsenal are probably going to need to get somewhere in the 90s to win the Premier League. And have they got that in them? I don't think they have. If it was a kind of a pre-Pep Premier League, then maybe they could. I just think it's asking a lot of anybody, not just Arsenal, asking a lot of Liverpool, Chelsea, or any of those teams to be able to keep up with Man City over 38 matches.
A word on Chelsea then, who seem to have been ticking along quietly but steadily under Graham Potter, and then out of nowhere a 4-1 defeat to Brighton and outplayed for the majority of that game. An anomaly or a concern for Chelsea?
Can it be both? I don't know. I can see both sides of saying it's it was one of those things and it was just an odd result, because, you know, they'd been unbeaten. They probably played their best football of the season, really, against Salzburg in the midweek before they were hammered at Brighton. And I think that Brighton are a team that can make anybody look silly. Their football is so slick at times. So I think you could argue that it was just one of those bad days for Chelsea. I wasn't impressed with them when they won at Villa a couple of weeks ago, though, either. That was a really odd performance. You know, they needed Kepa to be just like world class on the day, the amount of saves he was pulling off. So I think that you could argue both ways with Chelsea. My feelings are that it's very difficult for a manager to come in and stamp their authority all over a club during this period where there are matches every 3 days. And I just think that all of the Champions League teams, and I'd even chuck Man City in it to a lesser extent, but still in it with Liverpool, Tottenham and Chelsea, because they've been playing Champions League football virtually every week, and that is different to Europa League football. The players look tired, and these really good managers are not having the time on the training field to get the best out of the players.
With all of that being said, what's the best bet for this game, Mark?
Yeah, I still felt that Chelsea should be favourite, so I was going to go for Chelsea, draw no bet. Just to me, feels like home advantage should be worth a little bit more than being sort of anticipated for this game. Obviously, really interested to see how Aubameyang gets on against Arsenal. I'm not reading too much into Arsenal's win at Stamford Bridge last season, because, you know, that was that weird period for Chelsea when the stadium wasn't full, they had nothing to play for. You know, the takeover was sort of dominating proceedings and all the Abramovich stuff. So, not reading too much into that. I am reading more into Arsenal lost at Man United, they drew versus Southampton and maybe got away with it a little bit against Leeds. So with all that in the mix, but mainly with home advantage, I'm going to go for Chelsea, draw no bet. It just feels a little bit steep to suggest that Arsenal are as likely to win this game as Chelsea in West London.
There we go. That was our match of the day. Plenty more Premier League action to get through. No early game this weekend, so it starts with a good old Saturday, 3 o'clock. We'll start with Leeds against Bournemouth. Now, Mark, you weren't letting Bournemouth fans getting too carried away with themselves a few weeks ago, and you were proven right. They've lost their last three, going up against the Leeds side, who are coming off the back of a win against Liverpool. But before we speak about that win in this game, what did you make of Jesse Marsh's celebration?
Yeah, well, it's sort of Ali G style, wasn't it? It was different. I mean,
did you see what he said afterwards about it?
No, I didn't know.
He was asked, I think, on his Instagram, what was the celebration? He said he sort of didn't know, and his wife's been asking him all week if he's okay because she was worried about his sort of behaviour.
It did feel it was out of context, and it didn't feel like the right thing to do on the touchline, but I was pleased for him. I mean, he's had so much stick, and the Leeds fans were not shy in sort of letting him know the other week at Leicester that they weren't happy with him. I mean, so to win at Anfield is special. I know Liverpool are not playing great at the moment, but you know that let's forgive him. One of those moments where you kind of just lose yourself. But this game, I've written down here the first four words were no bet for me. I think it's really difficult. Look, Leeds are doing much better on expected goals, and Jesse Marsh referenced that, than the table suggests. But they were eight without a win before that Liverpool game. Two of Leeds' three wins this season have been against Chelsea and Liverpool. It's almost like they're better off playing against maybe some of those big teams, and they've got the space. And you know, it's in the games where they've been expected to do better that they haven't done well. So I'm not mad on Leeds odds on, but I do understand why they are odds on. As I mentioned, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Bournemouth's numbers, underlying stats were not very good. So no surprise they've lost three on the spin. They'll feel like they were a little bit unlucky to concede so late against Spurs, and the handball decision at West Ham the other week went right against them. But a long-winded way of saying I haven't really got an opinion. If I was to go for one, I'd probably say Bournemouth or draw, double chance, just because Leeds don't win often enough, in my opinion, to warrant a bet at that price. But they don't play Bournemouth every week.
Absolutely. Yeah. No worries at all there. Let's take a look at Manchester City against Fulham then. I suspect a lot of fancy football players are wondering the situation with Erling Haaland. Will he return for this game, Mark?
Well, I mean, those that are into their betting will have known that Haaland was out last week before the team sheets were in, given the way that Manchester City drifted. So if, maybe those fantasy players need to at least look at the odds, say, a couple of days before and then on the morning, and they might get an idea of whether Haaland's going to play or not. Pep Guardiola said earlier on this week that he thought he might be available. I think it does make a big difference, obviously. For this game, I'm going to go Man City 2-0, 3-0, correct score, split stakes. Fulham conceded exactly two in five of last six away. City have got more about them than any of the other teams they've played. But they were competitive, Fulham, away at Arsenal, away at Spurs, etc. So I expect that City will win comfortably enough. But, it might not be this absolute sort of six or seven that sometimes City are capable of putting on teams.
You described Nottingham Forest as not being a very good side earlier. They take on Brentford this weekend. How do you see this one playing out?
Under 2.5 goals. Biggest news on this one is that no Ivan Toney, of course, he's suspended. I had a look back. So since the start of last season, Toney's missed six Premier League games for Brentford. 1-1, drawn two, lost three. So not a great record. That win was at home to Watford, and there were two goals in the last 6 minutes, including a penalty. So that would concern me, I think, if you were back in Brentford to win this game. Forest have scored two goals in their last six matches. They battled, didn't they, against Brighton the other week, got their point. But on another day, that's an easy win for Forest. And I think Jurgen Klopp's still scratching his head as to how Liverpool put up such a high expected goal figure and didn't score against them before they were thrashed against Arsenal. I think that what Steve Cooper's trying to do is to just get them to be more resolute defensively, and that is working to a point. They don't appear to have that much up front, and Jesse Lingard's performance is not the best, I think we should say.
If you were Gareth Southgate, would Ivan Toney be in the World Cup squad?
He was in mine. He was ahead of Callum Wilson. Look, Callum Wilson's playing really well. The reason I had Tony ahead of him was purely because I think that Tony's as good as anybody at penalties. And realistically, okay, you might only need to come on and take a penalty because Kane's going to play virtually every minute, assuming he's fit. And I think that Rashford is maybe next in line anyway, unless they go for, you know, like a Sterling or Foden up front. So I don't think that kind of backup or third striker is going to play too often. In saying that, Callum Wilson's been banging in the penalties as well. But I just think overall, Ivan Toney's record is such that that it could come down to fine margins, and that would be the one for me. I mean, maybe there's an opportunity to take both, but I'm not sure that there is.
I know that Tony's probably taken hundreds of thousands of penalties in his life in training, but it still amazes me that he can do it without looking at the ball. I would 100% miss it if I tried that.
I don't know. I don't know how he's got the confidence to do that every time.
Amazing, isn't it?
I
mean, it is amazing.
Yeah, because even like you see like the different styles, aren't there? You've got that sort of Jorginho one that always makes me quite nervous. The Tony one, when he lines up, you just expect him to score now. Maybe it'd be like World Cup final when he misses one. But he's just remarkable from the spot. So, yeah, that's why. How long would Tony or Wilson play in the World Cup if they go? It's not going to be much. It might be a penalty. But if someone said to me, Wilson's the better player and he should go, I wouldn't massively disagree with that either.
No, fair enough. Let's take
who would you take? Who would you take?
I really like Ivan Toney. I really like Ivan Toney. And I think I agree. You're right in saying them, Mark. Realistically, if either of them are going to get limited minutes. So it is those small margins, isn't it, surrounding penalties. I think Tony's a cracking player. I think he'd be on the plane for me. Let's take a look at Wolves against Brighton then. Concerning times for Wolves, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last time we spoke, they were about to appoint Mickey Beale, and then
by the time we'd
finished, he turned them down. Now looks
I watched Mickey Beale's QPR last night in person. Can't say I was overly impressed. I'm not sure if they've alluded to it too much.
Sounds like Lopetegui might sort of do a U-turn and take that job. I think they need somebody of his ilk to come in there because, you know, Wolves are in danger at the moment. No Costa. He obviously got himself stupidly sent off in that game at Brentford right at the end. Means even less up front. And I'm going to go for a Brighton victory. The price, I don't think, is amazing. It's about the limit of what I would accept. But even when they went to Man City the other week, Brighton, they had more possession at the Etihad than Man City. That doesn't happen too often. They sort of penned them in for a while. And that had been winning. That game against Chelsea, I think, had been coming for Brighton because they've been playing well without winning. You know, Nottingham Forest, I referenced, it was a game that they easily should have won. They got three goals at Anfield. They scored four at Chelsea. They lost 2-0 at Brentford. And, I thought Ray was the best player on the pitch, the Brentford goalkeeper. So you do have those concerns as to just how many goals Brighton will score and how many chances they will waste because, you know, they haven't got that prolific striker. But I just think that they're a sort of better team than Wolves at the moment, in better shape. I think Wolves are desperate for the new manager, the World Cup, and to reset.
Let's take a look at Everton against Leicester then. This is the evening game on Saturday. I probably should have spoken about this point when we were discussing Fulham, but I watched the Fulham-Everton game last week. Was it 10 shots Mitrovic had or something crazy and didn't score?
He didn't have a lot of shots, didn't he? I thought he should have been sent off for that tackle that he got a yellow card for. I don't understand why he wasn't. That wasn't deemed a red card. It was a red card in my opinion. It was dangerous, it was dirty. I'm not sure he meant it, but that's not in the law. So he got away with one there. I know Frank Lampard wasn't happy, but overall, I mean, it wasn't a great Everton performance either. Pickford was their star player. For this game against Leicester, I think the draw, I mean, I think this match will be as tight as the betting suggests. We know that Everton are strong at Goodison. Leicester have tightened up a lot defensively. Everton have been in this slot a few times in recent weeks. And they played Tottenham, they played Fulham, and they weren't great games. I'm not sure this one will be either.
Okay. Don't sell it too much. Let's go into Sunday's action then, and we'll start with Aston Villa against Manchester United. And since we last spoke on the podcast, Mark, because we obviously had that week off, Villa have appointed Unai Emery. Slightly surprised by that?
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised because, you know, Emery had the opportunity to go to Newcastle and turned it down. And look, maybe he didn't want to leave Villarreal. They were in the Champions League, and or maybe didn't quite believe that the Newcastle project and the, you know, how long it would take to get the money in there. But I mean, Villa are an ambitious team, spent a lot of money. I think they've got some good players, and he's probably feeling like they can't drop much lower, and that he's got unfinished business in the Premier League. I think Unai Emery is a good coach, maybe lacks a bit of charisma, and that's a problem if you're managing, say, Arsenal, where he was unable really to ever, I suppose, just gel with the fans. I don't even know, is that a thing, to gel with the supporters? But you know,
absolutely.
What I mean? To
sort of, absolutely.
You know, to sort of take them along. He wasn't helped at that time, really, by the fact that, you know, there was more positive vibes around some of the other London clubs. And, you know, he just, you know, mumbled his way through press conferences. But speaking in a second language, yeah, I think he struggled to shake off for a while that stuff at Paris Saint-Germain where the players said he was really boring and they didn't like the sessions he put on. It's very different managing Aston Villa to managing Paris Saint-Germain. And so I feel like this is much more in Emery's wheelhouse. And I think that Villa are a team capable of more than they showed under Steven Gerrard. And I think that might start in this game here against Manchester United. I'm going to go for Villa or draw a double chance. I think Emery can get a reaction. United are doing quite well at the moment. Got another win against West Ham. But, you know, David De Gea was very important in that one. Just looking at some of their away games, 1-0 at Southampton, 1-0 at Leicester, 2-1 at Everton. Fine margin games that maybe could have gone another way on another day. No Bruno Fernandes either. I think he's been playing quite well. So, Villa or draw a double chance.
I think you raise a really good point there, Mark, about kind of managers. I think it's becoming an ever increasingly sort of tough job. Not only do they have to, you know, set their team out and play impressive football, but there is now an expectation to set a kind of journey for fans to follow.
It's hard at
Norwich at the moment, going from Daniel Farke, who was incredibly, you know, extravagant and quite flamboyant, to Dean Smith, who's the complete opposite. And although the football isn't too much different, the reaction towards the manager is incredibly different.
Yeah, I think it comes, look, at Premier League level, it's all about how you deal with those kind of really intense questions. And, you know, you can get put under a lot of pressure, particularly if you're at a bigger club and things are not going well and you need to still set out your vision for the supporters, because you can just get swept along with social media, and you know, everything you say can be a meme and you can just look really silly, and you need to have a lot of credit in the bank to kind of fight that off. And if you haven't got that, then you're in trouble. At a sort of smaller level, it's about taking the local newspaper on, isn't it, and sort of you know, taking them sort of on that journey with you. No less important, really, because it's absolutely essential that I think that the manager and the supporters get on, because if they don't, it's so much easier to just turn after a couple of bad results, and then you're only probably ever about four bad ones from getting the sack anyway, particularly lower down.
Absolutely. A manager who is seemingly getting it very right at the moment is Eddie Howe at Newcastle. They travel to Southampton this weekend. Newcastle looking the real deal.
They are, yeah. I mean, we've got a feature going in the Racing Post on Friday, just asking, you know, can they qualify for the Champions League? We've got the front page of a magpie trying to steal some kind of Champions League icon, and sort of these other teams sort of looking on jealously. I think they're being helped at the moment by only playing once a week, while sort of those other teams towards the top are having to play Champions League matches. But they are absolutely flying, playing some good football. When they need to, they're quite streetwise. And that game against Spurs the other week was the lowest amount of minutes the ball was in play, wasn't it? In the Premier League, was it 52 or something? They really killed the game. you know, Nick Pope dribbles the ball to sort of the other edge of his area, ages over restarts. But then when they actually get the ball into play, their football, very dynamic. Wilson, we've already mentioned, and we're on, probably spurred on by what Jack Grealish was saying about him in City's post-title celebrations, having his best period in the Premier League. Joe Ellington has sort of looks like a different player now. Guimaraes is, yeah, should be playing Champions League anyway, whether that's with Newcastle or somebody else, a real quality player. Having said all of that, I think they're a little bit short to win this game. Southampton or draw double chance is the way I'm going. I'm not sure that Newcastle are a great price here. They have only lost once, but they've had six draws, and Southampton showed in that game against Arsenal. They've also beaten Chelsea. They were a little bit unlucky against Manchester United as well. They can be awkward opponents, Southampton, and you never really get two performances the same from them. So the fact they lost against Crystal Palace last week doesn't even need to be a bad thing.
Okay, we'll talk about Palace now. They travelled to West Ham. I thought West Ham were a tad unlucky against Manchester United last weekend. Had some good chances in that game. How do you see this one going?
I'm going to go for a West Ham win. I thought that the only thing I would have said about West Ham, and I agree with most of what you just put out there, I felt they could have been more ambitious earlier. Yeah. And because there wasn't much to be scared of for Manchester United. And I think some of their play was maybe too predictable. So there were a lot of crosses going into the box, and like Dalot was dealing with them on one fullback. Like that's Harry Maguire's game. Harry Maguire doesn't want Jarrod Bowen running at him on the edge of the box. He wants Jarrod Bowen slinging a cross in and he can head it away. So that would have been the only reason why I maybe didn't join in with everybody saying, oh, you know, that was like a robbery of a result. But I do think that West Ham are playing better now than they were at the start of the season. Palace, fortunate to beat Southampton last week, and have not scored since August away from home. And their expected goals is much nearer kind of the relegation mire this time around than it was last season when they maybe didn't get the results they deserve necessarily on expected goals. This time it's sort of a little bit the other way around.
Did you say Palace haven't scored away since August?
The end of August, yeah.
That's remarkable.
A couple of goals, a really easy away game as well at Man City when they got those goals.
I can't believe that. That's
they've been very, very negative on the road. Wow. They were thumped, weren't they? 3-0 at Everton. That 0-0 they had with Leicester was one of the worst games you'll ever see, which was great for my over 2.5 goals there. too negative for me, Palace on the road.
Well, absolutely, proven with the numbers there. Final game we'll be previewing in the Premier League this week is a cracker. Spurs against Liverpool. Looking forward to this one, Mark.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, both teams will feel like it's a really good opportunity to play the other one, won't they? Liverpool, obviously not being in the best of form. Tottenham got a lot of forward injuries. Richarlison, Heung-min Son's joined that list. Kulusevski, Romero's out for 10 days, which conveniently sees him miss the rest of this sort of period before being fresh for the World Cup. Not the first time he's put Argentina before Tottenham, I think it's fair to say. But I was looking at this game and my initial thought, like before I saw the prices, were that I'll be with Liverpool. I can see them, you know, I just want to, I sort of felt like my pricing for this would have meant that Liverpool would have been a bet. And then when I saw the odds, I was actually a bit surprised to see Liverpool as short of 6-5 to win this game. They're away form in the Premier League. I've mentioned home and away form quite a lot in this podcast, and it's not actually something you don't get these big periods of, you know, home domination, terrible away. You know, it tends to even itself out over time. But they have been absolutely shocking away from home. Okay, you can lose Liverpool at Manchester United and Arsenal. These things happen. They failed to score at Forest. They drew 2-2 with Fulham. I mean, it wasn't a performance that we expect from Liverpool. That 0-0 against Everton, again, just lacked something, didn't it? So, you know, Tottenham are 10 points clear of Liverpool at the moment. I know they've got some injuries in the attacking area, but I just thought Tottenham draw no bet for this game just felt a little bit too big for me. I've said a little bit too much on this podcast. I'll try to say it less frequently from now until the end. But yeah, I don't know. When I was looking at the prices, I just thought that it would have been closer.
No, I completely agree. A quick word on Darwin Nunez, Mark, because although he's great fun to watch, I think as a neutral, he's just utterly balmy, isn't he? Is he the player that Liverpool needed, having sort of lost Mane in the summer?
Well, I think that Diaz was the replacement for Mane. Mm. They just so happened that they got him earlier, because otherwise Tottenham were going to buy him. Do you remember? And then he went and they got Kulusevski instead. Too raw, I would say, yeah, at the moment, Nunez. I think he's coachable, though. And Klopp is somebody that is capable of coaching players to reach the absolute maximum of their potential. And the potential is there. He hasn't played at this level before. He wasn't even at Benfica that long. He's playing in the Spanish second division. So maybe we do have to give him some slack at least. And so I think there's a player there. Yeah, I'm not against him.
No, I agree. I think the reason he's being spoken about a lot, obviously, is he's at Liverpool and will be, but he's different, isn't
he? He's erratic.
I haven't really seen a player like him before. He just, almost as soon as he gets the ball, he's got one intention and that's shoot. There was that great moment in there against Manchester City, wasn't there, a few weeks ago, and he literally had three players to pass to. Yeah. And there was never any intention to make the pass.
I don't know why, but when there's sort of South American players come over, particularly I would say Argentina and Uruguay, you do expect them to be different, yeah, if that makes sense. Like Romero's not a typical centre-back, the Argentinian that plays for Tottenham, is he? Luis Suarez definitely wasn't sort of what you would just stereotypical forward. He had an edge to him. Even Diego Forlan, when he was at Manchester, yeah, United, there was something quite fun about Forlan as well. I think he's trying absolutely, maybe even too much to make an impact, and he just needs to settle down a little bit, as I said a little bit again there. But I do think that overall, I think that Nunez is somebody that in the long run will score goals for Liverpool. He's just too raw at the moment.
Absolutely. There we go. That's enough on the Premier League for now. Let's get the thoughts of Dan Childs with the Championship and FA Cup. Well, always exciting to have Dan Childs join the podcast, even more so this week because we've got FA Cup action to preview. I'm sure Dan will be providing us with a tip for that. But we'll start with the Championship, Dan, where, as always, a very exciting midweek selection of games, teeing it up nicely for this weekend.
Yeah, you know, lots of ups and downs in the week, as there's always been in the Championship this season. I'm going to kick off with Blackpool. I fancy to win at home to Luton. Blackpool, like a lot of Championship teams this season, have been very inconsistent. But, you know, they're 22 points, only 2 points outside the top half, which is pretty good for a club of their size. Priced up at around about 9-5 at home to Luton, which I think is a decent bet. I mean, Blackpool have won two of their last three games. They lost 1-0 away to West Brom in the week. But I think West Brom are a team that are in a bit of a false position, going to improve from where they are. Luton, they've had a bit of a bad run since they lost 4-0 at Watford in the big derby match. I've had a bit of a dip in performance since then. Watched their game against Reading in midweek, the 0-0 draw. Reading match, they had the better of the chances, were unlucky not to win that. Luton also picked up a couple of injuries to key defenders. Tom Lockyer and Sonny Bradley went off in that game. So I think they might struggle to keep another clean sheet at Blackpool. And Blackpool, I think, are valued to get the win.
Yeah, going nicely at Blackpool at the moment. Who's up next, Dan?
I'm going to have to look at Bristol City's trip to Middlesbrough. I fancy Bristol City to get at least a draw out of this game. Middlesbrough priced up at odds on. I'm not convinced by that. Michael Carrick's come in. He's a well-respected manager. Every chance that, you know, maybe he'll do well there if he, you know, sort of picks up on the things that he's learned from, you know, some top managers, including Sir Alex Ferguson. But I do think he's a bit of a long-term project there. I don't think he's going to provide a short-term fix for Middlesbrough. They won in midweek, won 3-1 away to Hull. It wasn't an entirely convincing performance. Middlesbrough's last two goals were own goals in quite a scrappy, tight game. And I think suddenly making them odds on to win at home to Bristol City, who for me, one of the most exciting teams offensively in the division. I think that's way too short. I think Bristol City, you look at some of their attacking players, Tommy Conway, I've been impressed with this season, Naki Wells, Andy Byman and Antoine Semenya. There's a lots to enjoy going forward. Alex Scott, the young midfielder, is one of the most talented young players in the Championship. They lost in the week, lost 1-0 at home to Sheffield United on Tuesday, but they were very unlucky in that game. Bossed the game, won the shot count 16-4. So if they play anywhere near that level, I would fancy them to get at least a draw away to Middlesbrough.
Brilliant stuff. And I believe we've got an FA Cup tip to round things off.
Yeah, going to focus on the game. League 2, Crawley at home to League 1, Accrington. I think there might be a slight upset here. I fancy Crawley to win the game. 21-10 looks a big price to me. Lewis Young has come in as interim manager for Crawley. Came in sort of early October. Kevin Betsy was sacked after a very, very poor run. But Lewis Young has done a fantastic job since he's gone in there. 5 games unbeaten, Crawley. That includes 3 home wins on the trot. They're playing some really good stuff now. Confidence is on the rise. Got some good attacking players. Ashley Nadison and Tom Nichols are decent attacking players, not only for League 2 level, but I think they can cause problem for League 1 defences, you know, as they're going to be facing this time. Accrington sort of struggling now near the bottom, towards the bottom of League 1, 5th from bottom, just outside the drop zone. Only taken 1 point in the last 6 league games. That was a 1-1 draw at Lincoln on Tuesday night. On the confidence you feel is a little bit low in Accrington's camp. They've had a lot of injuries for quite a long time now. I think they might be on the end of a bit of a shock at Crawley this weekend.
Okay, looking forward to it. Dan, thanks as always.
Cheers, Jack.
Thanks to Dan, as always. Great to hear from him. Mark, let's get a selection of your best bets for this week then to round off the show. We'll start with a prop shop.
We've got a very interesting situation developing this weekend.
Have we?
Jack, absolutely.
Go on then.
There are a number of players that if they get booked this weekend, will miss next weekend, therefore giving themselves a 1 week break before the World Cup.
Ooh, okay. I like that angle.
Just going to reel off some of those players that are on 4 yellow cards. Gabriel Jesus, you've got Saliba at Arsenal, Mitrovic at Fulham, Harry Kane and Bentancur at Tottenham. I don't know if you want to have a multiple on all of those. Yeah. The one I was looking at just from this point of view was Mitrovic. I just felt he might get frustrated at City and, you know, he should have been sent off last week, as I was saying. So, I don't. What would you reckon? What would you reckon to the angle?
I like that. You changed your tone there, Mark. You went all official and sort of like you're about to do a government press conference or something.
You've got to be very careful. You can't accuse players of, you know, deliberately getting themselves booked to have a week off before the World Cup.
To have, I think.
And when in doubt, go for a nice narrative.
Absolutely. Well, there you go. You're not saying that it will happen, but there's a possibility. Let's get a long shot for this week.
FA Cup first round, as Dan's already mentioned. Fylde to beat Gillingham is the way I was looking. Fylde 7th in National League North, but they've got games in hand on virtually all above them. They're only 6 points off the top. 2nd Favs to win the league behind Kings Lynn. So a good side that might be in the National League next season. They've got former league players in the ranks. Don't see it being like an occasion where they'll be scared of playing a really struggling Gillingham team. They've not scored more than once in a league game this season. The 22nd for shots in League 2, 24th for shots on target, 12-5 Fylde is the one for me.
That's nearly a stat as good as the Palace one. I like that.
I was a little bit fortunate in terms of I bumped into Andrew Scutts. On the Bloodstock desk at the Racing Post. He's a Gillingham diehard. I was speaking to him last week, and he was just bemoaning Gillingham's attack. That sort of got me looking at the statistics. And I don't know if he's going to the game. I hope he is, because he hasn't seen Gillingham win in over a year. So and he goes so a lot. So, yeah, hopefully he's making that long trip.
Who would have thought that your long shot would have been inspired by the Bloodstock desk? That shows, doesn't it, that the office working, you know, it's
there we go. There we go. If filed win, you can put that in the posters up on the underground, get people back in the office.
Any other office inspired tips in the treble this week?
Well, there is a Crawley fan. There's a couple of Crawley fans in the office, and they do form part of the treble. It's Crawley v Accrington, both teams to score. Crawley, 12 of last 14, seeing both teams score. Also in the FA Cup, Grimsby against Plymouth, both teams to score. Grimsby have had the most shots on target in League Two. Love the way Plymouth played their football. They're punching above their weight, given the amount of quality in League One at the moment, but doing so in style. And sticking to the both teams to score theme, it's Lille against Rennes, and more on that in a minute for the Nat. So it's a both teams to score treble, the games at Grimsby, Crawley and Lille.
Goals galore in that one. You've teased the Nat, so let's go all in on that.
Yeah, so Lille v Rennes, both teams to score, about 8-13. Rennes, sexiest team in France, or at least the sexiest team in France not called Paris Saint-Germain. They've scored in all bar one of their league games this season. They're second best on expected goals. They've scored the second most goals. They are a fun team. I know people have this impression of in France, they don't call it League One for nothing because no team scores more than one goal. That used to be the old joke. I don't think that rings true anymore. Lille, a joint third. They're a team that, again, likes to play on the front foot. Seven of their last eight at home. Both teams to score, backers of beating Clover. So I'm expecting a decent game. It's really busy Sunday, isn't it, of football, Premier League, and got the Rome derby as well to look forward to. But this game's not going to be on the radar, I appreciate, of too many people, but I will put a shout out for it. I think that Lille against Rennes should be a good watch, and hopefully goals at both ends.
I always recall Sunday being, you know, the sleepy day or not much going on. It feels like one of the busiest days of the week now, doesn't it, with all the sport?
Yeah. I mean, you know, sleeps for, well, it's just for the evening, isn't it? 12 a.m. till 6 a.m. And then you get up and then you make the most of each day.
There you go.
You don't do that, do you, Jack? You're a bit more sleepy than that.
I like to get my 8 hours. That's all I'm saying. But I was going to say last week's podcast sort of turned quite self-help at the start and a little life motto kind of.
Oh, you only need 6 hours. I've come to the conclusion you only need about 6 hours now.
Really? Oh, I get really grumpy on 6 hours. You wouldn't want me on 6 hours, Mark, I'll tell you that.
I think the listeners don't want us on for more than 45 minutes. So.
Well, that's true, and we're pushing it, aren't we? The World Cup is very soon, and the Racing Post are going all in. Just talk us through what people can expect on the 17th of November.
Yeah, so in the Racing Post on November the 17th, Thursday, November the 17th, we will have everything you'd expect, really, from a Racing Post football pullout. So outright best bets, top goal scorers. We've got Racing Post jury, some celebrity columnists. Nice interview with Pat Nevin, who I know Scotland are not in it, but I think Pat Nevin's a really good talker. So we've got him. What else have we got? The 32 team profiles with icons next to the players. So you've got predicted lineups and we've got icons. So it's really easy to see who the top scorer is, who their assist maker is, who's the most frequent fouler. So it could be good for your card bets, the penalty takers. So to help you with your golden boot bets. So we've got all that. And then some nice sort of quirkier features. So Kevin Pelline's looking at referees and going to sort of tell the readers, really, you know, does somebody from Africa have higher makeups than somebody from South America when you're having your bets? And so you can sort of, you know, research all of your arbiters. We've got a trends piece that will look whether there's any value in backing a lot of the favourites to win the groups, or should you be backing outsiders or a CONCACAF teams over slash underrated in the markets for those type of things. What about in the group stage games? Is there a pattern? Should you be backing draws? So yeah, we've got like a trends piece there. So I feel like that's about the vast majority of it anyway, Jack. And the one thing I am looking forward to actually is we've got a real sort of in-depth look where it goes your best bet .. for this country, and we've got 7 or 8 dedicated journalists that have taken amazing. 4 teams each, and they're going to look at all 32 teams and just in about 100 words or so say this is the best bet for this team, because within a pullout you'll get loads of words on Brazil, you'll get loads of on Argentina and France and England, but what ends up happening is a team like Costa Rica, you just say, oh, well, not going to qualify, and that's about it. So we thought, well, no, that's not right. Let's give them 100 words. Let's investigate the top Costa Rica goal scorer market. Let's see how many points or goals they might get as an example. So, yeah, so there's going to be a best bet for all 32 teams, as well as all of the other, like the usuals, like your outright market and best group bets.
Really excited for that.
I should work in marketing.
You should. That was a really good sell, that, Mark. And I'm scared for my job role, because you could quite easily take it. And that's in the paper on the 17th of November. It will be available to purchase online as well. So put that in your diary if you've still got a diary or your online calendar or something. There we go. Really looking forward to next week's episode already. I hope you enjoyed this week's. If you are having a bet, remember to do so with money that you can afford to lose. We'll be back next week for the final round of Premier League fixtures before the World Cup. Looking forward to it. Stay safe, everyone. Bye-bye.